Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Section 10 podcast. Here are your hosts, Jared Carabas, Colby Mick, and Steve Perrault.
Started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team fucking here. Started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team here. Nigga, started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now my whole team here. Nigga, started from the bottom, now we're here. Started from the bottom, now the whole team fucking here. I done kept it real.
What's up and welcome back to the Section 10 Podcast, episode 200, presented by Barstool Sports. It is the home of your first place, best record in baseball, Boston Red Sox. My name is Jared Carabas, and I am a certified G and a bona fide stud, and you can't teach that. In this right here, this is Colby Mick, and he's 7 foot tall, and you can't teach that. Bada boom, realest guys in the room. Steve, how you doing?
What up, Section 10 in the building?
In the motherfucking building. With 200 episodes. 200 of them. Not 100. 200.
Not 150.
Not 150.
200.
200.
Not 175.
Not 175.
200.
200. It's 200 episodes. Mm-hmm. Are there any other Barstool podcasts besides maybe Pardon My Take and KFC Radio that have 200 episodes?
Is PMT that high? Well, granted, they're...
They might not even be at 200.
I don't think they're even that high. We're just going to say no because it makes it sound better. No. Yeah. No way.
I would imagine the other show I'm on is...
Oh, yeah. You guys have 200 episodes?
We do like... two, sometimes three a week for 2 years now.
Let it be known that Mixtape definitely has the most time on air.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You definitely have the most hours recorded.
5 million hours.
You don't like mark your episodes?
No, we did. Yeah, we were up to like 31. Every once in a while, I'll drop a volume title.
Mm-hmm.
And we were up to like 30 pretty quickly. So I would imagine we're well past
200. Damn. All right, well, either way, Section 10, if you didn't know this, is the second longest running Barstool Sports podcast.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
Which is pretty good.
Came in right after KFC Radio. Still chugging along. Dave wanted to cancel it, by the way. Fun fact. I don't know if a lot of people know that.
That is a fun fact. Nobody knows it.
Yeah. When I moved to New York.
Also, Dave doesn't know. Yeah. He just didn't get it.
He didn't get it. When I moved to New York, by train. Starring Nine didn't exist yet. And got in his office, and he was like, what do you want to do with Section 10? Because I know what I want to do with it. And I was like, well, you tell me what you want to do with it first. And he was like, cancel it. And I was like, fuck no. And he was like, all right, well, we need a baseball podcast. And I was like, all right, well, we can still do that and have a Red Sox podcast too. But yeah, Dave wanted to cancel it when I moved to New York. Fun fact.
Well, I don't think Dave didn't realize that you can do a team-centric and a league-centric podcast at the same time. He was like, oh, my God, two baseball podcasts? What? Yeah. It's like, yeah, it works.
Yeah, he basically, like, he is Vince McMahon. Like, he is Vince McMahon. He's a very smart guy. He built this company. But then there are just some decisions where you take a step back and you're like, what the fuck are we talking about here? And that was one of them.
Question to you, Jared. So yeah. 200 episodes is a lot.
Lot.
And major shout out to Coley.
Coley here for 199 of them.
This show would not be the same without Coley.
That's true.
I'm dead serious.
That's true.
But, Jared, my question to you specifically, from the jump, what is your favorite and least favorite part of the 200 episodes we've done?
Favorite? I mean, finally getting merch and seeing. Because, like, there was, you know, when you're doing a podcast, it's three of us sitting in a room by ourselves.
Yeah.
We don't see the people that we're talking to. And, you know, I would go to Fenway and people would come up and be like, yeah, I love the podcast. And I'd be like here and there. But once we got merch... Every fucking game. There's like 20 people sending us pictures wearing Section 10. Like, people were down at the Tampa series being like, yeah, now we have like the Section 10 merch, but now we also have, you know, the player specific, like inside jokes t-shirts with, you know, different Section 10 lingo. It's all over the place at Fenway.
Sure.
So now you can like truly see
how many people listen to the show, how many people like the inside jokes, how many people think it's funny, whatever. Like, that's the coolest part about it, is just seeing it out there in the wild and having people that, you know, are casual Red Sox fans, like friends of mine that are casual Red Sox fans, go to like one game a summer and be like, yeah, the fucking people behind me are talking about Jumbo Dong and fucking ice cream scoops. I don't get it. But there's your fucking podcast merch is all over the place.
We released those shirts at like a unique time last year. Like, it was towards the end of the season. It was honestly right around playoff time.
Yeah.
And the first one I saw, which I'm sure you did too, was the shot of this kid. Met him a couple weeks ago. I think his name's Mike. Mm-hmm. And he was on the big screen with the Section 10 shirt on. And someone took a picture of that. And I was like, holy shit. Like, Section 10 is literally in the building, and from that point on, even waking up, all the way to waking up this morning, and just casually seeing a dude in front of the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
You got one in Aruba. You got one down in, like, India.
In the range of ages.
Is insane.
It's incredible.
This week specifically, we got dads all over the place.
Dads, grandpas.
Hugging each other, kissing babies.
Then we got, like, 16-year-olds.
Yeah.
Actually, this one listener, I forget his name. I want to say it was Mike, maybe.
When in doubt, it's Mike.
It's Mike. He DM'd me and he was like, hey, do you have like Section 10 baby onesies? Because like I want, like I'm expecting soon and I want to have my kid in a Section 10 onesie. I was like, we don't make them. But he's like, can I have permission to make one custom? I was like, do it. Yeah, like, that would be sick.
That would be the cover for the Section 10 of the ballpark and beyond.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's definitely the coolest part, is seeing the reach.
The shirts, man.
Yeah, like seeing people all over the fucking world wearing like Section 10 shirts, and not just like wearing them, but like being proud to be like, yeah, here I am. Like, pack, you're about to go on vacation to somewhere really, really nice. Can't forget my Section 10 shirt because I got to take a picture while I'm there.
Can't do it.
It's crazy.
It is crazy.
And a lot of people are like, this is the first thing I'm packing. They'll show the lineup of four like Section 10 related shirts, and I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah, that's the coolest part about it.
Least favorite obviously probably involves me, I would assume.
Yeah, least favorite is probably having to work with Steve. You know, then, like, you know, you have guys along the way where, you know, you miss PD Analytics being on all the time, and then fights being on all the time. Like, Pete didn't want to be on anymore because he had other shit to do. Fights couldn't do it anymore because he had other shit to do. So, like, that shit happens. But I don't know if it's, like, a least favorite. Like, I just love doing it.
I'll tell you what I don't like. I'm looking back throughout the archives. You used to just write, and I assume this was you, episode 33, parentheses, the name of the show.
That's Pete. That's Pete.
That's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really dumb.
I mean, there's many things that I hated that Pete did. That was one of them.
I won't stand for Pete's slander here.
No, I was just getting to a good thing.
Steve, I mean, that's not great. Steve is just going to shit on Pete.
No, I am not going to shit on Pete. This year, Pete and I have been totally fine. We went to two Sox games together. They've both been extra inning walk-offs. So I think we're good.
I guess.
Yeah, no, I think Pete, honestly, he meant a ton to the show and
started in Pete's basement. Well,
started in Pete's basement there, with you guys. I obviously wasn't.
A couple of, I think, like episode maybe 2, 3, 4. We're in my parents' basement.
Okay.
I did like a little fold-out chair or fold-out table in my parents' basement doing like a couple of those episodes. And then we did a few of them in Alan Craig's studio. Shout out Alan Craig's studio in Pete's mom's basement. And then Steve showed up at our doorstep like a little baby that was dumped on the front porch of a fire department.
Mm-hmm. That's your favorite way to go about it. But no, it was episode 11. I hit you up because Gary Streisky was on. I was like, oh, that's my guy. Mm-hmm. And my favorite thing about Pete's mom's basement is that we had like well-respected Boston sports media people.
Like
that
Kirk Minahan was just chilling in Pete's mom's basement.
Was going through the kitchen as she's making cookies and whatnot, and we're going down to the basement to do a podcast.
Yeah, like, who else was there? Big Jim Murray was there. Jimmy Stewart was there.
You said Jim Murray. Yeah. Who else?
Tim Britton was there.
Yeah. The first one, when I showed up to Pete's house the first time,
Thrill Ride was there.
It was me and Thrill Ride that show up at the door. Like, what a random combo that is. Yeah. And I was like, hey, Pete.
We did one of the first, I think it was the first guest that we had that wasn't in Pete's mom's basement was Dave, because he wouldn't come.
Oh, we had to bring, like, this stuff to Dave's house.
Yeah, he was like, if you want me on your show, you got to fucking come to my house. So we did a show at his kitchen table in Back Bay, which was, it's a nice home. It was a $2.5 million home.
Pretty nice place.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty nice place.
It wasn't terrible.
Yeah, that was probably my favorite, just the fact that we had those people walking through Pete's mom's kitchen and just like, all right, we're about to do it.
Favorite interview?
I don't want to... Holt's up there, man. Holt's up there. He was great.
Yeah, he was good.
Brock Holt was great. Mo was great.
Hasn't sent me any clothes yet.
Pedro, yeah, I was going to say, I was going to check in on the MVP collections. Mm-hmm. Pedro, we need Pedro either physically here.
Yeah, we need to do that over again.
Because that we got Pedro.
It was like the lost episode. Like, we put it out, but we dropped it on a Friday, and like, no one fucking heard it.
We learned a lot from that episode.
Did
I think, because we had to try to like do it over Skype, and like, his wife was there, and then Pete asked the dumbest question of all time, mm-hmm. and...
That I'll accept. He did ask the dumbest question.
We had kind
of...
What did he ask again?
He was like... It was like from...
The Sandra Bullock thing.
Yeah, like, that fucking surfaced because of me. Like, I fucking put that out there because I was like reading the book again, and it was basically... It was SI for kids, and they asked him, you know, who... What did they say? Like, who's your favorite actor? Or like... I forget what the question was.
It might have just been like favorite actor.
He basically said
so like,
he wants to fuck Sandra Bullock.
Who would you want to date or something like that? And he was like, I would like to fuck Sandra
No, it's
Bullock.
Like, what's your like wish? Like, what's your dream or something? And he's like, I want to fuck Sandra Bullock. And they're like, this is for a kids magazine. He's like, I would like to sleep with Sandra Bullock. And then Pete asked him about that. And it was like, dude, that's from like 2001.
And his wife's right next to him.
Yeah. It was super awkward.
Yeah.
Super awkward. Like, killed the entire vibe of the show.
I think the fact that we've made it, you and I have made it to 200 episodes is kind of shocking. We are not similar people. Like, outside of the Red Sox, what do you say we have in common?
Nothing.
Which is, like, crazy. I mean, most...
I don't have anything in common with a lot of people. I just...
No, you got your wrestling crew.
Yeah, like, but it's, you know, then, like, Robbie and I connect over wrestling, but, like, that's all we connect about.
Well, you're also not an overly bubbly human. There are only a few things...
I kind of am. In my circle, my actual circle of friends, I am.
That's gonna be a tight circle.
Oh, yeah. Been friends since like fucking kindergarten, like middle school.
Okay. 2, 3, 4?
Huh?
2, 3, 4 people?
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, I think that's the most shocking to me because we are just such different people, but the show's worked.
Has it?
It has. Especially with Coley.
And then here comes Coley.
I'm nasty.
This big baby just comes and
club you into there.
The timing couldn't have been better with Coley.
But it was
right at the start of the season.
It was written in the stars that Coley was going to end up here because. I've known Coley for six years?
No, it was at least a year or two before the World Series.
All right, so let's call it 7 years. And Coley was the one that when we brought in the 1,000 Don Orsillo heads into Section 10 and handed them out for Don Orsillo's last game at Fenway Park, that was Coley who walked us into Fenway with these big-ass cardboard boxes and helped us hand them all out. So that was 2015. So yeah. Then 3 years later, 3 years later, you ended up on the show. Look at that.
Yeah, he knew it was meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
Many have argued it should have happened sooner.
I agree.
Yeah. I think once we really got rolling, I was like, oh, shit. We missed some episodes with Coley.
Yeah, well, because you originally came on when we were doing the Pedro episode.
Yeah, that's right. The
where
Pedro
we just
episode.
Like
that's
reflected
right.
on Pedro's career, and then Coley shows up with like fucking a notebook worth of notes. Like he was very prepared for this episode. Little did we all know that was basically his audition for Section 10.
Dude, right. That's okay. I think that's when I knew. Like Coley showed up with notes. I was like, what is that? Is that for like mixtape, right? You're like, no, this is for Pedro, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I got a lot of stuff to get out.
I don't do notes for mixtape.
I just assume with 5 hours, you might have like pages. That's when we knew Coley.
Yeah, I'll dick around with Pedro.
Yeah.
Sure do. One of my favorite interviews that we ever did.
The Lost interview?
No, not that one.
Sleepy Frankie?
Sleepy Frankie was a good one.
That was my least favorite day of my life. I don't know. You got a smirk on your face.
The Curt Schilling interview.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that we did. It's two-parter. A lot of people keep asking about that one. It's in, what, the 30s?
It's way back. Yeah, I think you can... I don't think you can get it on iTunes. Ago. I think on Spotify and other ways you can get it.
It was crazy because...
It was at his house.
It was at his house.
Yeah.
It was like we went to his house. We did like an hour and a half, two-hour interview with him.
It's on iTunes.
It's on iTunes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Episode 41 and 42.
Nice.
41 and 42.
Only one of them named part one. The other one just says with Curt Schilling.
Yeah.
No, thanks, Pete. Good job, Pete. but yeah, that was a fucking great one. And it was so great, Steve. They were having him back for episode 200.
We're doing it again.
We're doing it again.
This is very much needed. First off, because Curt has been like a little subtle, like basically every week or so I'll see you guys have a little back and forth. Like Kurt's always kind of hovering.
Yeah, he's always around.
He's always around.
Yeah.
Like you know he's near, you just don't know how close.
Yeah.
And And he was great, man. He was great in person. And again, we're going to do the same thing we did last time. Mm-hmm. No politics. None of that bullshit.
I might let him go on some politics.
No, no.
I got questions.
We're just, when you get Kurt talking about baseball, and this is what gets lost in all the Kurt shit. He's great.
He's great.
He is great. He's so good at it. So we're going to try to just stick to that.
Yeah. It'll be fun.
I think it's the perfect guest for 200. Because we have a lot of guests that haven't heard the other episodes. The other Kurt interview.
Yeah. I mean, we've definitely, like, year over year, you pick up more and more listeners, and they're just going to jump in where they jump in and
exactly.
not, like, go back.
It's a big ask yeah. for them to go
but
back.
But I will say, go back and listen to the Kurt Schilling interview.
Yeah.
Like, the two-part.
That was some of our finest work. Yeah, we kinda, prepared a lot
timeless.
For that. Yeah.
He just texted me right now. He said...
Got live Kurt text.
Oh, his home number. So I'm not going to read that one. He said, use
he
my
said,
home number.
Here's his number.
Coward.
Yeah.
Absolute coward.
Okay. All right, so without further ado, here's our interview with Kurt Schilling.
I wanted to go somewhere where I had a chance to win a world championship for four consecutive seasons, and that narrows the field tremendously in Major League Baseball. And I believe one of the contenders in that field is the Red Sox, and that made it ultimately a much easier choice.
1-0 the count. Here's the pitch. Swinging a fly ball. Shallow right field. Out goes Cora, fighting the sun. Calling, and he makes the catch in foul ground. Staggering to end it. Kurt Schilling with a one-hit shutout. The Red Sox losing streak is over as they blank the Oakland Athletics 1-0.
Wicked, wicked hard. Wicked hard.
Dunkin' Donuts introduces the New England Maple Cheddar Sandwich.
Park. I can't find a place to park.
Park.
Can't find a place to park.
The question is that the Marcane itself that they're shooting into that ankle or blood from the shots? But like a scene from The Natural, Schilling climbs the mound and prepares to take on this Yankee lineup. Reaching for it, a pop-up, and Millar hauls it in, a perfect first inning. Knocks it down. It's Schilling having to get over and cover with that bad ankle. Two out to the right side. Schilling again has to at least go into the area. And Millar gets him off the hook. Another 2-2. Sierra strikes out. Schilling is at 94 miles per hour on that fastball. A feeble swing by Sierra. He strikes out for the third time. And game six goes to the eighth.
Tonight, God did something amazing for me. I knew that I wasn't going to be able to do this alone. And I prayed as hard as I could. I didn't pray to get a win or to make great pitches. I just prayed for the strength to go out there tonight and compete. And he gave me that. And I just can't explain to you what a feeling it was to be out there and to feel what I felt.
Here it is. Ground ball to second. Reese. The Boston Red Sox have won the pennant.
So we just did something that's never been done before against the best team in sports history. So
you ready to go next time out?
I'm ready to go.
Back to full. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
To the greatest Red Sox team ever.
We are world champs.
World champs.
Wait, world champs.
Not champs, world champs.
No, World Series champions.
Right. Wait. But the Boston Red Sox are
World Series champions.
No living player can say that.
And a ground ball to short. Lugo makes the play. Lead off walk. Schilling pitches around it. He's doing his usual. Is this it for Schilling in a Red Sox uniform? They'll let him have it here at Fenway Park as he makes his exit, leading 2-1 in the sixth. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
We're a 16 million plus member family. We go out on the field every day with the largest following, I think, of anybody in the baseball world. And there's a commitment there that we have to those fans and an obligation to the organization. And it starts with Mr. Warner, Mr. Honey, and Mr. Lucchino. Their commitment to not just us, but our families. It's huge. And it's in a lot of ways, it is unprecedented. And there's an obligation as players to give everything you have and a little bit more for the people like that do that for you.
Thank you.
All right, so we are here with my Uncle Kurt. To you, he's Kurt Schilling, but he's my Uncle Kurt. Haven't talked to you on the phone in a few months. Kurt, how you doing?
I'm good. What's up?
Oh, nothing. Just I'm just here with Steve, just talking a little baseball. It's our 200th episode. Do you have any words for us?
Congrats, man. I'm assuming you're in full-fledged panic since the Sox lost the game this week, right?
No, I'm actually the guy that has to calm everyone down. I feel like everyone else is freaking out.
Yeah, that's what you are. You're the emotional compass of Red Sox Nation.
Yeah, I'm the guy that, what was that, fucking Animal House, where he's like, everyone remain calm.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's me right now kind of in the streets calming everyone down, because I feel no sense of panic whatsoever. I mean, a 6-game lead, we've seen teams collapse before. If you're in that Red Sox clubhouse, Kurt, what are your words to the room?
Play the game today. I mean, this is one of those things that only spirals out of control if you don't have people in the clubhouse to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
And they do. Listen, from the outside looking in, I only have one concern, and that's Chris Sale. Nothing else to me matters, because if he's not healthy, that I don't think there's any chance they can win the World Series.
So you've been outspoken about Chris Sale going to the disabled list twice. Do you think that there's something seriously wrong? And if there is, because I feel like you think that there is something seriously wrong, why haven't they gotten an MRI yet if there's something seriously wrong? They haven't done it.
Trust me, he's already undergone an MRI, if not more than one.
Why wouldn't they have made that public knowledge? Why are you hiding that if that's the case?
Here's the thing. Based on his last outing that I saw him throw, I would argue that it would be very hard for something severe to be wrong, because he was throwing like 122. He struck out like 17 guys in 3 innings.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I also don't view him as a guy that would be like, yeah, it's okay. Put me on the DL. I'll miss a couple starts. I don't know.
But
what if?
Because I feel like of all people in this league right now, there's Chris Sale would be very high atop the list of guys that care way more about winning a World Series than a personal accolade
like
the Cy Young Award, which he clearly would have won had he just kept doing what he was doing. So what? There's no conspiracy here. You don't think that a conversation took place because so much has been made of this since the start of the year, talking about resting him, making sure that he's fresh in the second half, because we know the history. It wasn't just a last year thing. This is a historical thing over his entire career. Going to him being, hey, listen, we have a 0% chance of winning the World Series if you kind of run out of gas towards the end. Would you, if we're able to build in some breaks for you, how receptive do you think a guy like that would actually be?
Okay, well, so I went through somewhat similar thing. I think it was 2004 when I came over here.
Yeah.
And I remember in April, Chris Greinke pulled me aside. He said, listen, and he laid out a spreadsheet. He said, these are the last 6 Septembers for you. And the numbers weren't flattering. He said, we need to fix this so when you come into the second half and at the end of the season, you're strong going into the postseason. And we completely rearranged the way I worked. And it worked.
But what did they do? Be more specific. What did they do with you?
We just completely changed the high-impact stuff that I was doing early in the year. More water work, more plyometric stuff. Not as much, you know, I mean, you know, the old time where you put the Mizuno sweat top on and you run.
Yeah.
You know, Clemens running around the streets of Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are different now. Because, you know, I was a big guy, and physically I put a lot of innings.
Real husky.
That was the stat for me. The stat for me for any starting pitcher is innings.
Would you say you were husky? What would be the adjective?
Oh yeah, no. I built like my. Listen, this is not a body. This is a cruel family joke, dude. I mean, this. I got my dad's body, all chest, no legs.
Preach.
But it apparently is pretty well figured proportion for pitching. So we adjusted everything, the way I ate, the way I slept, everything, to get to make sure that I was as strong in the second. And I was. If you go back and look at the September, the last half, I didn't lose a game after we lost a game. I had my strongest month in September of that year, and I was strong and all the things that went with that. So that is how I would approach this. I say that because this didn't come up in May. Right? They went into this season, this spring training, knowing exactly what they were up against.
Mm-hmm. You made 5 starts in the month of September/October, and you had your lowest ERA of any month.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And again, because we addressed that from the beginning of the season, what I'm trying to say is they went into spring training this year. Actually, they went into the offseason last year understanding, hey, listen, this is not a fluke. This guy has trouble maintaining himself in September. And it has nothing to do with work ethic, okay? Let's be very clear about that. It's just some guys are physically different. Now, you know, I always say if you think about arm slot, okay, mm-hmm. and you think about straight over your head, if you hold your arm straight up and point to the sky, that's 12 o'clock. The closer you get to your hand next to your leg is 6 o'clock, right?
Yeah.
So the closer you get to 6 o'clock, the healthier your arm angle is. So in that sense, he's very Randy Johnson-like. He has a very healthy arm angle. Mm-hmm. It's not very it's taxing, but it's different than everybody else.
So nobody healthier than Chad Bradford.
Yeah, right. Well, that's a little bit extreme, but yeah, okay. But he's got a very healthy arm angle. So I thought that they would approach this from a spring training perspective. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, listen, this is how we're going to readjust. You're going to work differently. We're going to put some weight on you, whatever. I don't see this as – because here's the thing. When you're on the DL and you're not pitching, you're not pitching. I you know what I'm saying? You're not – coming off the DL to pitch every 10 days, there's no way to work a rhythm.
Right.
There's no way to get into a groove.
But do you think he actually needs to, when he's skipping starts against like the Yankees?
I'm less concerned about the health thing today than I was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, but
something to me, unless this is 100% about protecting him from himself, which I think is kind of stupid, but maybe it is.
Doesn't it seem to be working though? Like they have enough of a division lead to absorb the blow of not having Chris Sale,
right,
saving his innings, and then it's like, all right, miss two starts, come back, dominate. Miss two starts, come back, dominate.
No, and here's the thing: that 10-game lead makes them one of the few teams in the game that can do this.
Right. So I don't think. Do you think in your mind Chris Sale is on the disabled list even once if the division lead has hovered around 2 to 4 games this entire time?
I don't believe so. Maybe I don't know. I honestly don't know, because I don't know what we're dealing with. That's why I said this is a very awkward thing, because coming off the DL, and listen, I know he was great the last time out, but that's not a thing that can stake. You can't consistently take 10 days off and pitch and be a stud.
Right.
Maybe he will again, but you want to roll into, and maybe, you know what, maybe this is just recognizing, hey, listen, we'll get him this rest in August. September, he's full bore or whatever. Maybe that's the idea. I don't know. I just know, like I said, I love this team. I think they are a team for the ages, but I don't think they stand a chance to win a postseason series or win a World Series without him pitching games 1-5 or 1-4-7.
So you know, you talked about the division lead earlier. You're in the same boat as me. You're not concerned about the division lead?
Sure I am.
You are?
They're not playing, they have a six-game lead,
Kurt.
I can be concerned as a fan. As a player, you know what? Like I said, one of the reasons why the teams that I played on, I think, became or were good and handled adversity well is because we never got outside the 9 innings in front of us.
Right.
They got a game tonight.
So,
they got 9 innings, and that's the game they need to focus. The 6-game lead is irrelevant, because here's the thing: it's a 6-game lead. For you not to win the division, you have to cost it yourself.
Yes,
no one can take it from you.
Agreed. But
so,
let me read you.
I think they're too talented to give it away.
I agree with you. Let me read you a paragraph from my blog this morning, and you can tell me if you think that this is an accurate comparison for the situation. Because the Red Sox had a 10.5 game lead, and now it has shrunk to a 6 game lead in a short amount of time. So when you lose that many games in a short amount of time, everyone freaks out, but you still have a 6 game lead. So let me read you what I wrote this morning. I said, quote, "That's like saying an 8-inch dick is small because you had an 11-inch dick. 8 inches is still big, you've just had bigger. And you might be used to that 11-inch dick now, and that might be the only thing that makes you feel good. But again, that doesn't change the fact that an 8-inch dick is a big dick." Is that true?
That's Shaughnessy-esque right there.
Is that true?
I mean, listen, I don't know where your experience from taking dick comes from, but... you know, I'll defer to you on that, I guess.
I mean, an 8-inch dick is still a big dick. If a 6-inch, I mean, is that true? Yeah, I mean, Kurt, is an 8-inch dick still big or not?
Yeah, it's average.
No, that's a big dick.
That's a big dick.
Yeah, that's a big dick. I think the average size of a penis in the United States, I think, is like 5 inches. So if you're working with 8, that's still big.
Again, I, I, you're, I'm going to have to defer to you on taking Dick. I'm not. I can't give you any firsthand knowledge or experience.
Right.
With that. So yeah, I mean that's one way I guess to look at the lead. Not the way I would look at it, but yeah. Sure. Okay.
Right. So I mean, it's a 6-game lead. Less than a month ago was still the biggest division lead of the entire
right.
year.
Well, look, come on. Let's remember a couple things. No matter what you want to say about 04 and 07 and 13 and all the great things and that have happened in Boston, you had one of the most monumental collapses in the history of the game a couple years ago.
Yeah, that wasn't great.
You know, and these fans, they have memories. I mean, I don't think you're talking about anywhere close to the same thing, because I think this team is so ridiculously talented. But it's there. And remember, the Yankees have made up ground, and they're every bit as hurt, if not more hurt, than most clubs in the game.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
You know, I still think Brian Cashman's done a pretty freaking good job of building that organization.
Yeah, Kurt, you had briefly mentioned 07 there. We didn't, when we got to do the interview at your house, which is still, I mean, that's right up, that's like favorite interview territory.
I picked that as my favorite, Kurt.
That was about 160 episodes ago, and that's still at the top. Question to you, we didn't talk much about 07 when we were there. What was the biggest challenge you guys faced? Because you basically cruised, and I don't think a lot of people really remember the 3-1 deficit in the ALCS.
No.
People are like, oh, they just won the World Series.
Yep, and I got to tell you, the same meeting that we had and I spoke about in 04, where I basically said, listen, this is not about, we don't need to win 4 games in a row. Yeah. We don't have to win 3 or 2. We don't even have to worry about winning the game tonight. We need to win the top of the first. And we got so micro-focused, so goal-centric focused on innings and at-bats for 4 straight games. And if you know, the thing I remember was Tito's press conference after game 3, and they asked him, you know, what are you doing? He said, well, we're going to come out tomorrow and play our asses off. And it just cut, there was a huge, like, exhale of, okay, well, we're down 3-1. You remember, that was Sabathia's Indians. They were they were pretty good.
Fausto Carmona, yeah, that team was good.
We had the same meeting. We drew on 04 and said, listen, guys, we've been here before. For the guys in the room that had been there before. Mm-hmm. We've been here before. We don't have to come back and beat them 4-3. We got to go out tonight, and we got to win the top half of the first. And we literally did the same exact thing for 3 straight games. We stayed focused on the at-bat that was happening right there. And pitching-wise, you know, we stayed focused on getting the guy out that was at the plate, not worrying about, you know, I got the top half of the lineup coming, blah, blah, blah. You just stayed focused. And we did it for 3 more days. And then you remember, in both instances, we didn't lose a game. After that.
Yeah, correct.
We were down 3-1. We came back, and, you know, we knew in the World Series. Both World Series were kind of, and I say this with all due respect, but we knew there's no way they could beat us. And it wasn't about beating us in the World Series. We knew we didn't think they could beat us 1 game.
Yeah.
And we said so in our scouting meetings.
That's perfect. Didn't Manny had a line, right, when it was 3-1, that it's like just baseball or it's just a game or something like that?
I don't know. He might have said, he probably said something dumb.
Highly likely
like
that.
Because he was going to put a bat in his hand, and that's the only thing we cared about.
Yeah, that's all it meant.
Well, I mean, like, you played with Manny, and you follow closely this 2018 Red Sox team. Do you see the same Manny comparisons to J.D. Martinez that everyone else has seen?
No, because, listen, and it's not to take, J.D. is a different hitter. I think, you know, there's a very, I do love the fact that my debate about the AL MVP is between 2 Red Sox. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, legitimately, I think right now, if the season ends today, it has to be Betts or Martinez, and whoever loses gets second.
Yeah. No, no love for Jose Ramirez?
Love him to death. And think he's legit, and that would be my 3rd place guy. You know, but they're all 3. Let's put it this way. If all 3 of them were to win it, mm-hmm. no one could argue any of the choices,
yeah.
although, unless you're a homer.
That's how I feel, so, yeah. Which I'm very objective and non-biased, so I wouldn't, yep. it wouldn't mind either way.
So, but J.D. is, I mean, listen, for some reason he seemed to sneak up on people that weren't diehard baseball fans. This is what he's been doing for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
And it was the signing of the offseason. What had happened, like, you know, 5 minutes before the first day of spring training?
Pretty much.
Yeah. So, I mean, tip of the cap to Dombrowski, although I got to believe that watching Michael Kopech pitch has kind of been kind of a little uncomfortable for Red Sox fans.
Yeah, a little bit. Just a little
holy
bit.
Cow.
Yeah,
but But no, he's had a great season. I think it's a great signing. This is a ridiculously talented team. And I would argue, you know, with Devers being hurt, and you haven't even seen his best yet, and this kid that they brought up to AAA who went like 22 for 6 this weekend.
Chavis?
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
Kid they brought up. I mean, they're talented and deep. But, again, right now it's about I need to make sure October 1st when the season ends that Chris Sale is starting either – you know, is starting the first game of the postseason for us, because I think that you know, what's David Price going to do? I mean,
probably going to dominate.
Well, maybe he will.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I think the only guy, I would tell you this. I think Chris Sale, if he goes in the postseason this year, will have an absolutely, he'll have a Madison Bumgarner October.
Ooh.
I like that.
Just because anytime you put a guy like that in the corner and make him prove himself, he usually ends up embarrassing people.
Yes, which he's been doing for months.
I don't think he's a guy who struggles in September. I think he's realized now that – or October. I think he's realized now the hyper-focus that he needs to have, and I think it's going to be pretty sexy when he ends up doing it. But,
yeah.
But that's the only guy on that staff. I love Porcello. I love the whole staff, but, I mean, again, October's a different game. And if all you need to do is look at David Price's career numbers or Randy Johnson's career numbers to understand that. Mm-hmm.
With the Cy Young, how much do these guys genuinely care about winning the Cy Young? That might sound like a dumb question, but like with Sale, do you think that he's looking at the bigger picture and wanting to put them in a position to win the World Series over winning an individual award?
I don't know. Here's the problem. It's not a two-way street, and I say that for this reason. Hey, listen, if I'm Chris Sale, and there's part of me that's saying, yeah, listen, I'll sit out. I'll be ready for the postseason. You know, if I pitch, I win the Cy Young, so why don't you guys just make sure you pay me like I won the Cy Young?
Yeah, yeah.
Team would never do that, right? I mean, that would be unheard of. But so there's a little different angle to that. I don't think it matters anything. I think he'll win the more important award. I think he'll win the Players' Choice Award, which, you know, when the players, because I think the players in that league are going to make sure that he is the best pitcher. I mean, Verlander, kudos, and Kluber, but Chris Sale's on another level. I mean, Chris Sale's better at this point doing things that Randy Johnson didn't do.
With Randy, he basically took two Cy Youngs from you. Like, are you salty about that or no?
No. I finished second three times, and all three times I deserved to finish second.
Yeah, it was Randy twice and then Johan Santana.
Yeah, and they all three had transcendent years. I mean, yeah. Remember, Johan didn't lose. He went 13-0 in the second half.
Yeah, he was ridiculous.
But I also, two of those 3 years, I won the Players' Choice Award.
Yeah.
So I was good.
Do you think do you think you're the best pitcher to never win a Cy Young Award?
Oh, I don't know about that. I just know that whoever won.
What's the answer to that question?
October,
if it's not Curt Schilling, and that's not even me pumping your tires, because you know that I don't actually want to do that. But if you're not the answer to the question, who is the greatest pitcher to never win a Cy Young Award? I'd love to know the answer to that question.
Yeah, I never thought about it like that. Like I said, the only thing I care about is I know. I don't care who has plaques in Cooperstown. I don't think any of them could have beat me in October, and that was the thing that I wanted to have when I walked away.
That's right. Speaking of being one of the greatest of all time, I sent you a video of side-by-side footage of me next to Matt Harvey in his prime.
Is that really your segue?
Yeah. What was your biggest takeaway from watching my pitching mechanics next to Matt Harvey when he was in his prime?
That you made the right career choice.
I mean, that's
no doubt in my mind. You made the right career choice.
I mean, I tried to go pro. Scouts couldn't find me.
You're that guy who I run into every now and then. It will say, "Man, I really wish I hadn't gotten hurt in high school." And my response is, "No, it was the best thing that could have ever happened."
Yeah. No, because, I never got hurt. I was perfectly healthy.
Right.
But
you just right. Right.
Scouts just weren't coming out to Saugus.
For somebody that doesn't play often, it was not. Let's put it this way. At Barstool, you probably look like Koufax.
Oh, yeah. I'm the best here. There's no doubt. Yeah.
I've seen, like, KFC, and I've seen Big Cat.
They're terrible. And
the Combine was one of the most embarrassing athletic things I've ever watched in my life.
So I said this, and a lot of people scoffed and rolled their eyes, but I said, if you put together a lineup of the 9 best hitters in this office, and I pitched a simulated 7-inning game against them, that I would throw a no-hitter. What's your take on that?
I would not be uncomfortable putting money on you.
Ooh, okay.
Well, and that's just it's not really a testament to your talent as much as it is a testament to their lack of.
I can accept that answer because, I mean,
but
honestly,
I don't know everybody that's anybody in that office. So
no one played
baseball. Havens could probably I don't want to get carried away.
No.
But, you know, he is one, I remember him talking very long and hard about how good of a softball player he was, which apparently was supposed to mean something.
Yeah, that's that's different when you're staring down 97 on the black from the Saugus
Rocket. Well, first of all, let's be clear, you're not going to throw 97.
Yeah, if I don't want to.
I'm sorry?
If I don't want to, I won't.
All right, my phone must be breaking up or something. I'm hearing something stupid, and I know you wouldn't say it.
If and when, Kurt, Red Sox team finishes with the most wins in franchise history, does that make them the greatest Red Sox team of all time? Because it was you who said that the 2004 team was the greatest Red Sox team ever assembled. If this team breaks the Red Sox season record...
I don't think there will ever be a team that will be able to take that away from us.
No. But, like, what if hypothetically, this Red Sox team shatters the Red Sox single season wins record and then goes, like, fucking, how many does it take? 11-2 in the postseason. They win a World Series. I see where you're coming from, and I actually agree with you because the pressure of winning a World Series when you hadn't won one in 86 years.
Right.
Because it's like, it's sort of... You know, I'll ask you this. Do you think if the 04 team got swept in the ALCS, do you think the 07 team would have won the World Series? Do you think that, like, what are the implications?
I don't know because, again, I told you, 04, we drew a lot of the guys that were left from 04 drew a lot of, I know I did, of motivation and inspiration around having done it before.
Yeah.
It wasn't daunting. We can't, you know, I mean, and I think the reason why I would. You know, I would be a homer and biased about 04 is simply because when you look back now at how it played out, very few teams, if any, could have ever done what we did. You know, I would put the 04 team against any Red Sox team in history in a seven-game series, any Red Sox team in history. Offensively, I think it was might have been the best team I ever played on offensively. But you had a non-peak Pedro who was still a stud.
Yeah.
You know, and we had a legitimate bullpen. We had the MVP of the postseason in Keith Foulke or Derek Lowe. Mm-hmm. We answered the bell, and that's what great teams answer the bell. And that will be one of the things that this team will get judged on. Well, you know, win 100. I mean, because you guys remember, I was part of the postseason that didn't involve the 116 win Seattle Mariners.
Right.
You know, I mean, we played the Yankees that year because that 116 regular season wins means jack in October.
Correct.
Yeah.
Because October, the game changes.
Yeah. No, that's true. I know from your perspective, you're known as a playoff pitcher, known as one of the greatest playoff pitchers of all time. Last time we interviewed you, you gave us some hilarious just stories that we probably haven't heard before. Is there anything specifically from your time in the playoffs or any stories that you have of getting to the ultimate goal, getting to the World Series, winning the World Series that we maybe haven't heard?
Are you talking about Red Sox teams?
Any team. Maybe Red Sox specific, but any team, Diamondbacks too.
Well, I got to tell you, one of my most vivid memories was, well, I have two. One was, and people find this, don't believe this, but we, in game four of the postseason in 04, we watched Miracle that afternoon.
Really? Didn't even know that.
And we won. So we did it for game five. And then we did it for game six. And we did it for game seven. And I swear to you, as the credits were rolling for games before game seven, as the credits were rolling in the movie, Theo Epstein got a call from Jim Craig.
Ooh.
Now, I don't know if he orchestrated that, but that was one of those, okay, you know, this is meant to be kind of a thing. Yeah. And it was just, that was one of the very cool. But I remember, if you guys remember back to the 0-1 World Series, the Yankees cleaning up the three games in New York, coming back, a home runs off Byung-Young Kim, and the world is just in hysterical. And I remember after game, because I pitched 1-4-7, after game five, when they did it again, and we're down, we went from up 2-0, and I mean, not just up 2-0, but just totally dominating these guys. And we dominated them for the middle three games as well, but they come back in the ninth to win. I remember walking into the training room after game five, and all the guys were sitting around, and I said, okay, guys, here's the deal. If our fucking plane crashes on the way back to Phoenix, it could not be more surprising than what we just watched. There's no fucking chance. So no matter what happens between here and game seven, you got RJ tomorrow, and I'm going to go game seven, and barring an act of God, we're going to take home a World Series trophy. So, I mean, and we laughed. I mean, it was probably one of the most resounding defeats in my lifetime as a team, that Game 5 loss, because, I mean, it just couldn't be, right? I mean, he can't give up another home run tonight.
Sucks. Yeah, he's not
the best. He can. But we laughed, and we got shit-faced. Like, everybody. Guys that didn't drink were, you know, it was one of those, there's nuns in the streets kissing topless men. I mean, you know, fever pitch. Because we weren't going to be able to experience anything close to what we had just experienced. And, well, it came back, and RJ did his thing, and Gonzo did his thing, and, you know, it was one of the greatest World Series that ever lived. But I have, I mean, my God, I have, I'm doing a show now on CRTV, and I'm a lot of stories that I'm remembering I had forgotten. I'm starting to tell, and I find them funny. I know I told you guys we told stories. I told you about the A-Rod fight.
Yeah.
But there's a couple other really good stories. Like, did I tell you the Joe West story?
Which one?
I think so. Yeah, I think you did tell the joke. What was it specifically? Was it about, like,
about
that was about
inches?
Yeah, the
oh,
inches.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That was
yeah,
maybe
yeah,
the favorite
yeah,
story
yeah,
on in Section 10 history.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
Yeah.
About
and
this
then
many.
I told, did I tell you the Mark Portugal story?
I don't think so.
No.
Okay. All right. So we're in Cincinnati. This is 1991. I'm pitching with the Astros, and Porch is pitching for the Astros as well. We're in Cincinnati, and you remember the old cookie cutters, you know, the old riverfront there?
Yeah.
Just like Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, they all look the same.
Yeah.
They were really loud stadiums, too, because they were circled, you know, sound reverberated inside. And we're playing, and Porch is pitching, and Eric Davis hits a home run to center field. And I didn't know this, but when you hit a home run in Cincinnati, they shoot a cannon off in center field. Scared the dog shit out of me. We're sitting on the bench, and Davis hits a home run, the cannon goes off. I want to say it was that Joe Oliver comes up next. First pitch, boom, hits another home run. Cannon goes off. And it's loud as shit. And then I want to say it was Hal Morris, but it might have been Chris Sabo, comes up. The very next pitch hits another home run. Cannon goes off. Our pitching coach, Bob Clark, goes jogging out to the mound. And you have to know, Porch is kind of a fuck-up. He's a good, funny guy, but he's a mess. And Clucky gets to the mound, and he's standing next to Porch. Porch looks up at me and goes, "What the fuck are you doing out here?" He goes, "Listen, I got nothing to say to you, but I want to give that guy in center field time to reload that cannon before the next hitter comes up." And you can hear Porch from the mound going, "You motherfucker!" And screaming at him.
That's great.
Back to the dugout.
We need more cannons in baseball, which is definitely the central theme of that story.
I can't imagine having one at Fenway with that offense.
Oh, that'd be unbelievable. Dan Shaughnessy is currently blaming you for the Paw Sox moving to Worcester.
Right.
Would you like to comment on that?
What? He's an ass clown. I mean, my God. Somehow Rhode Island coming to me and asking me to move my company there has been translated into me breaking in somewhere into the state capitol in the middle of the night and stealing money from them. Yeah. I don't know the equivalent, but Dan's just, he's just a bad guy. And I don't know any other way to put that. There's a guy who should be thanking his lucky stars, who's had issues with his family and health issues, and everything's come out good. And, you know, he's been bitter ever since his bullshit curse got broken.
You guys need to fight it rough and rowdy.
Yes,
I think like that's how this ends.
He's nicknamed Curly Haired Boyfriend for a reason.
Yeah, shout out to Carl Everett. And then the last question, Kurt, what are your thoughts on Donald Trump's foreign policy? That's
well,
all the time we got today.
That's all we got.
Kurt Schilling for coming on the podcast here today.
Recurring guest, Kurt Schilling.
This is number two.
Let's get together this last month of the season and do a podcast during the game.
Let's do a live fucking show. We want to do Section 10 live as sort of like a launch party for the postseason. So if and when we do that, we want to get you there involved for that show.
Or we could just do it from my house and watch the game on TV.
We can't sell tickets to your house, Kurt.
Sure we could.
All right, then
we'll do it.
Section 10 live at Kurt Schilling's house.
Shonda wouldn't mind.
Yeah, she really wouldn't.
She wouldn't mind at all.
That's the hard part.
But I bet you everybody but you would know how to flush the toilet.
Yeah. You're
the damn toilet.
Yeah, the toilet is just not, it's just not a 21st century type toilet. It's just not.
Oh, well. But thanks, Kurt. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you so much,
Always
Kurt.
Always a pleasure, guys.
Take it easy.
We'll talk to you later.
All right, guys.
All right, big thanks to Uncle Kurt.
for coming on by.
Mm.
Always a pleasure talking to Curt Schilling. Say what you want about the guy, but he's fun to talk baseball with. If you keep him to baseball, good baseball guy.
Still like the most heckled person I've ever seen at Fenway.
By his own fans?
Yep. During the 13 World Series when he was still on ESPN and they were set up like online on.
Well, that's after the fact.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he had done some things.
Yeah, I mean, some still, things didn't go so right.
Still.
Yeah.
It was still shocking to see.
Shocking.
I thought 04 was going to give everyone a pass to do whatever the fuck they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not the case.
Not the case at all. Maybe if Twitter didn't exist.
No, I mean, it was more like the Rhode Island shit.
I know, but I feel like he could have gotten past the Rhode Island thing had it not been for some tweets.
The Rhode Island thing wasn't as in your face. The tweets are literally right there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are my words.
Yeah.
A lot of people our age would just kind of not really care about the Rhode Island thing.
Yeah.
But
I don't care about Rhode Island as a whole, so yeah.
What was your favorite part about that Rays series?
When it ended?
Are the players' weekend jerseys cursed for the Red Sox? I mean, 0-6. It's in the proof is in the pudding.
I don't think so.
You don't think they're cursed, or you don't think it's good?
Both.
All right.
Fair. I mean, it's definitely not.
Fair is fair.
0-6 is not good, but I don't think that there's.
Small sample size.
It's very small. You play a whole season with those jerseys, bet the Red Sox win the division.
Those jerseys are cursed. I mean, it's pretty obvious.
0-162.
Yeah, that would be a tough season.
That would be a tough season.
That would be
at
a tough season.
At what point into an 0-162 season would you be rooting for 0-162?
0-60.
No, you could still finish 102-60 at that point.
Yeah. Imagine if that happened. It's started with 60 losses and then went 102-60.
I think it's much easier to go 0-60 than it is to go 102-0.
I would agree with you. You can really control going 0-60. You can do that intentionally.
Yeah.
I think it would have to be over 100, though. If you're like 0-99, I'm still holding out a little hope.
For the season or just to avoid
just to avoid the 0-162. Once you hit 0-100, I'm like, all right, let's do it.
Let's finish this string out.
Yeah, let's. We even come close to a win, I'm gonna be livid.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. But 0-6 with the player weekend nickname jerseys. Not. I think the curse isn't so much that they're wearing the jerseys. The curse is that they're ignoring their real nicknames.
Mm. Yeah, so it might be payback. That's why the baseball gods are making them lose.
It's like. It's almost like the curse of Carrabba's. I'm not trying to force my nicknames upon certain guys. Like, I understand Brock Holt cannot wear Big Cock Brock on the back of his jersey. I get that.
He could write BCC, though.
Yeah, of course. And, like, J.D. Martinez going with
Flacco
over Jumbo Dong is an insult to the fans. Like, you're Jumbo Dong. That's your name.
He could have just had Jumbo. Right?
You could have had Jumbo.
Yeah, I could see them turning down the
like
Jumbo Dong.
Benny going with Benny instead of Benny Biceps is an insult to the fans.
And not going with Drew is an insult to a win.
If you're Drew Pomeranz, you have to wear Dwoo.
What is he, Big Smooth?
Yeah, well, yeah, I like Big Smooth. I like Big Smooth.
No.
I like Big Smooth, but how do you get the fans back on your side? Dwoo. That's how you do it.
That's the last thing he would do. He still sucks, Mike.
Mitch Moreland wears the two bags. If fucking Sandy Leone goes out there wearing only active HOF,
it'll be pretty good.
How do you not do that? He's aware of the nickname. There was like a whole story on Mass Live about
it. Dickhead, that's why.
But it's funny. They all look like dickheads.
Yeah, they do.
The whole fucking point is to look like dickheads. If you take it seriously, you look like a dickhead.
It'd be funny if Manfred said that. The whole point of these jerseys is to look like a dickhead.
Yeah. The whole point is for it to be funny. If he wears that nickname, it's endearing to the fans. It's funny. It serves its purpose.
So my question to you guys, it didn't seem as nearly as cool this year because they're just going to have the same nicknames every year, right? So is this really going to be that cool moving forward? No.
Nope.
It was cool last year, and now it's like, oh, okay, they just have the same names, and they still lose every game. This sucks.
Yeah, I'll be honest.
But it's for the kids, in quotes.
Fuck the kids, Steve. Fuck them. I want... Real nickname. If we're going to do nicknames...
Let them put whatever they want.
Real nicknames.
Anything they want.
How many
Not whatever they want. Whatever I want.
Okay.
How many of these could they possibly sell?
Think about it from that perspective, Coley. How many more would they sell...
If
they had those nicknames versus fucking Flacco? Who wants a fucking Red Sox Flacco jersey? Nobody.
Nobody. Who wants a Red Sox jumbo dong authentic MLB jersey? Everybody.
Everybody.
You
wants
could
them.
Just do that too.
You could. I don't think they probably have a
because I tried doing that. They didn't let you custom.
Just be larger human beings. Bully it through.
Like JB Jesus.
I could see people, especially in Boston, being mad about that.
Fuck those people too.
Yeah. Well, fair is fair.
Race gets into section.
Fuck them
once again.
No, I mean like.
No, I know.
It's a very like it's Catholic a, city.
It is. They would not. They would not love it.
Fuck them, Coley. You need Eduardo Nunez wearing a noontime jersey.
It should have just been like just
Eddie Aces.
Clock. Yeah, when's he coming back?
Soon.
Need Aces.
Stevie Knox.
Pedroia's still trying to come back too.
Well, Rick Porcello wearing fucking Venti Dos. Yes. Motherfucker, I gave you like five fire nicknames. Pretty Ricky. Ricky Raindrops. Rip City Ricky. Ricky Porchlights.
Yep.
How many nicknames do you need to fucking get away from Venti Dos? What the fuck is that?
The problem there, you might have too many. He didn't want to offend.
Davey Tinglefingers going with, what was it, Slim Duncan?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I like that one.
Why?
It was way better than Astros.
Price is not going to go for any nickname that someone's given him. He's going to do what you don't want.
Listen, I know the bit we're in right now. Slim Duncan was strong.
No, it wasn't.
It fits better for Cully, too.
He looks like Tim Duncan in the face.
It's a Tim Duncan thing.
It's a rapper who's dead named Slim Duncan as well. I don't know if David Price knows who that guy is, but either way, it was a great.
Davey Tinglefingers. Merch, you're moving it.
We're talking about two separate things, because the merch would be moved, but these guys just aren't going to do it.
Or if he had put just Price, David Price is good on the back. Yeah. That would have been hysterical.
It curls around like Salt of the Gabagoozie. Yeah. Like that.
David
that would
Price
be nice.
Is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or just is good on the back, because he is David Price.
Is good would be funny.
He is David Price.
Yeah.
We can piece it together.
Is good.
It would have been really strong.
Is good would have been good.
Would have been great.
People would have been wildly confused.
And even worse part about the weekend, they should ban weekend series in Tropicana. Like, watching those games brings my weekend down in that stadium.
Especially when you get fucking shuttlecocked.
If you get swept in a weekend in Tropicana and your team's the one that got swept, it is a miserable weekend.
Can we just talk about the fact that the Red Sox were one day short of going an entire calendar year without being swept?
That's pretty good.
That's good.
Yeah.
They had a strong December.
The last time that they were swept was August 27th of last year, and the Rays completed their sweep on August 26th of this year. They went 364 days without getting swept.
And that would count the little dinky two-gamers, right?
Yeah.
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 So you almost like need to get swept by now.
Yeah.
Like it's by accident you could get swept.
They got swept. And people are freaking out. And by people, I mean Yankee fans.
Yeah, they are.
Yankee fans six are actually back. Acting like they clinched the division on Sunday.
Yep.
You're six games back, you fucking idiot. You're six games back.
Real quick, the AL
Hold
Central.
On.
No, go for it. You're hot.
July 30th, I think, is the date that at the time, that was the largest division lead by the Red Sox all year. July 30th, six games. You're happy to get back to that? It hasn't even been a full month that. How are you happy to be six games back?
He just glitched a little bit.
Though. How are you happy to be six games back? Like, woo! Only six games back with 30 games to go.
Let's go.
Here we come.
We got this.
Jared, they got Luke Voigt.
They got the fucking Voigt man.
Fucking.
You know what? This fucking Hubs. This fucking rat Hubs. Has like have an original thought for once in your fucking life. If you look at Hubs's Twitter, it's just my fucking tweets, but Yankees. That's it. He just does my shtick, but with the Yankees. He does the fucking Big Papa Yankees lose video, but for the Red Sox. He does the gold bottle tweet, but it's not in caps. He does the fucking nickname thing, but the nicknames suck. He calls Sonny Gray the Sun Man. Get Hubs in here now. Steve, go get Hubs. Now. Get him.
Yes, Father. Yes.
Get him.
I'll get him.
Get him in here now. We're not getting Hubs on.
Yeah. Fuck Hubs.
He bitched out.
Yeah, what the hell? He was like,
we
nah,
asked
I don't
him to come
do
in.
It.
He was like, no, guys, come on.
Don't
please.
Do it. Don't do it.
Don't do it. Oh,
don't
my
hurt
God.
Me. Don't hurt
oh,
me.
Don't yell at me. That's what he did. So we're not having Hubs on. And I guess that's it.
That'll do it. 200 episodes. 200
episodes.
Ride. Thank all you guys.
Yeah. Thank you to the listeners. Guys. Thank you to everyone who reps Section 10 at Fenway, around the world, all 30 ballparks represented. We need to start keeping track of how many fucking countries Section 10
is. Getting the countries.
Morning. Yeah.
We're getting to that point.
So thank you to the listeners. We do it for you guys. On behalf of Coley, Steve, Pete, Fights, everyone who's ever been involved, everyone that's ever been a guest, everyone who's ever listened, we thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Here's to 200 more.
Wouldn't want to cuff you.
Thank you, far too kind. Can I get an encore? Do you want more? Cook it raw with the Brooklyn Boys. So for one last time, I need y'all to brawl. Now what the hell are you waiting for? After me, there should be no more. So for one last time, nigga, make some noise. Who you know fresher than Ho? Riddle me that. The rest of y'all know where I'm lurking, yeah. Can't none of y'all mirror me back. Yeah, hear me rap, it's like Angie rapping his prime. I'm Young H.O., rap's Grateful Dead. Back to take over the globe, now break bread. I'm in Boeing Jets, Global Express. Out the country, but the blueberries still connect. On the low, but the yacht got a triple deck. But when you young, what the fuck you expect? Yep, yep. Grand opening, grand closing. Goddamn your manhole, crack the can open again. Who you gonna find open in hand with no pen? Just draw inspiration. Who you gonna see? You can't replace him with cheap imitation. For these generations, can I get an encore?
What's up?
Hey.
What's up, Kurt?
Hold on 1 second. What's going on?
What's going on? How are you?
Good, how are you?
I am well. Thanks for asking.
What have you been up to?
Kind of just nothing. Kind of just watching baseball. I don't really have much of a life at all, to be honest with you. I did go to the baseball tavern with your daughter, though. Not with her, but she was there.
I know.
Yeah, I know that you know. That was the first time that I think I've seen her out in the wild.
Right.
Yeah, her friends can drink me under the table. So that was like a 5 minute experiment where I was.
But that's not really
not surprising at all.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not a big drink guy.
No, yeah. you're a lightweight.
All right, are you ready to roll?
I am ready to roll.
Cool. How much time do you got?
Whatever you need.
Wow, that's why you're the best.
That's a dude right there.
All right.
It may not mean nothing to y'all. Understand nothing was done for me, so I don't plan on stopping at all. I want this shit forever, man, ever, man, ever, man. I'm shutting shit down in the mall and telling that girl she the one for me, and I ain't even planning the call. I want this shit forever, man, ever, man, ever, man. Last name ever, first name greatest, like a sprained ankle, boy, ain't nothing to play with. Started off local, but thanks to all the haters, I know G4 pilots on a first name basis. In your city, faded off the brown, Nino, she insists she got more class, we know. Swimming in the money, come and find me, Nemo. If I was at the club, you know I balled, chemo. Dropped the mixtape, that shit sounded like an album.